You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to another edition of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Heroes in Crisis number 2, Justice League Aquaman Drowned Earth number 1, Justice League Dark and Wonder Woman The Witching Hour number 1, Terrifics Annual number 1, Supergirl season 4 episode 4, Ahimsa, Arrow season 7 episode 4 level 2, Legends of Tomorrow season 4 episode 3 Dancing Queen, and Titans Season 1, Episode 4, Doom Patrol. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. Alright, first up for DC news. DC Universe's Swamp Thing has cast his title character. Andy Bean will portray Alec Holland, while Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s Derek Mears will play Swamp Thing.
I'm excited to see this show. I am curious how they're going to approach it. I think it could be really cool. I think there's the potential for this to be a really cool show.
I do too. Based off of what we've seen with Titans, I'm excited for more of these DC Universe shows.
Yeah, and I mean, if they're going to be going for a similar tone, I think Swamp Thing fits that really well, because at its core, it should be something of a horror series. Like, Swamp Thing is at its best when it's telling like monster stories and stuff like that.
So, yeah, that'll fit right in with the tone of Titans, I can tell you that. All right, next up for DC News, The Death of Superman and The Reign of the Supermen animated movies are coming to theaters on January 13th and 14th, 2019. Reign of the Supermen releases on digital starting January 15th and on Ultra HD Blu-ray on January 29th, which I think we previously announced that, but the theaters, coming to theaters was new.
That's a cool idea, showing the two together. It totally makes sense. I'm still really excited to check them out, because I just feel like they're going to be good.
Yeah, I do too. And hopefully we'll review them here on the podcast sometime in the future. Specifically when CW shows aren't on.
I'm curious how successful those days, because they tend to do these with some of their bigger animated releases. They do that like 1 or 2 day release. I've never really looked into how successful those are, but hopefully if those help cover the budget, you know what I mean, and help get more made, I'm all for it.
Yeah, me too. And I mean, they keep releasing them in theaters, so somebody's got to be coming to watch them.
Right.
I know we've gone and seen some of them, so.
Yes, that's true.
All right, next up for DC News, Jeremy Irons has been cast as Ozymandias in HBO's Watchmen. So we're going from Alfred to Ozymandias.
So there had been like a lot of rumor and speculation that was who he was playing. I'm really excited because like Jeremy Irons, I love him as an actor. But like, I think that's a great casting, and I'm really curious to see what they do with it, because obviously if Jeremy Irons, he's not a young dude, is playing Ozymandias, you know that they're telling this story later on, and like, what is that story going to be like? I'm excited to find out.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting. We've talked about this before on DC News, and it's not going to be what we expect from The Watchmen. It's going to be different, so I'm excited about
it. That might be the smart thing to do, because I mean, there's only you a as a show, just as an HBO show. If you just adapt the comic, it really you probably only have one season, maybe two if you really stretch it. You know what I mean? So I don't know. This makes sense. I am a little bit surprised. I thought they might go in the other direction and set it in like the early and explore like the early heroes' careers.
I don't know.
Like the original Owlman and some of those guys. That's kind of what I was thinking they might go, but we'll see. I'm very, very curious to check out this show.
I am too. All right, next up for DC News, we got our first look at Superman and Lois in the Elseworlds crossover, and I thought the picture was stunning. It looked like they were at the Fortress of Solitude.
It was fine. Again, we've seen Superman, and he still looked like Superman. I saw it and I was like, okay. I mean, well, because what are you gonna do? Like, I mean, obviously, it's the same actor playing Superman. He's wearing the same suit, which I have no issues with. So I was like, okay. And it's a actress playing Lois Lane. Okay. It
Don't
was
know.
good. It
I
was a good
noticed.
picture. It was a good picture. But I mean, I guess I just saw it and was like, okay.
I saw it and I just got more excited for the Elseworlds crossover because I'm
I'm
excited about
already,
the.
my excitement's already there. You can't, like I said, you can't get me any more excited for this already. So, like, is anything else at this point? I'm just like, okay, just show me the show already.
So, I don't know. I just thought it was cool to see them. So, all right. And for our last bit of DC news, John Barrowman confirms season 7 return for Arrow. Now, we don't know if this is just for the Elseworlds crossover, or is he going to be coming back during the season? So that wasn't confirmed, only that he was coming back. Now, what do you think, Cletus, that maybe he's behind the new Green Arrow mask?
Possible. I was going. My thoughts were when they what the Oliver's trying to get to the demon. My thought immediately went to Merlin. I know it doesn't wouldn't necessarily make sense for him to be in prison, but like he is currently the demon's head.
Yeah, well, he was. He's supposed to be dead.
Well, but you know what I mean. But like, I don't know. I'm not saying that that's, but that's what I thought when I. When they initially said the demon, I was like, oh, is Merlin supposed to be back? That's kind of interesting. I know it's not exactly quite the same, but I don't know. I have no idea. I don't think he's. I think this Green Arrow, we can get into this later, but I think the Green Arrow is somebody from Oliver's past.
That could very well be. Well, Barrowman's from his past.
Well,
Malcolm
that's true.
Merlin.
That's true. But, like, I guess pre-season one past.
Okay, that could be too. All right, yeah, we could talk more about that later. All right, well, that wraps up DC News for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
Hey, gang, are you looking for another podcast to listen to? Well, you're in luck. The Nerdy Laser is a podcast, and we specialize in 90s nerd culture. But we don't leave anything out. If something is cool and nerdy, we will talk about it. So join myself, Richard Yule, and a variety of guests on the Nerdy Laser podcast, available on iTunes, Podbean, and the ESO Network.
And we're back! But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. For you.
Let's talk Heroes in Crisis number 2. Cletus, I had to give this the old thumbs up.
I agree with you. It was a thumbs up for me. This is I mean, I have to admit, I could see the criticism if people thought that this was kind of a slow start. Although to me, the first issue was a lot. This one was definitely kind of hit the brakes a little bit, but I mean, I'm very intrigued by what's going on with the story. I'm really curious if Booster really, like, Booster's clearly not the villain of the book, but did he get manipulated? Did he actually do it and was manipulated, or is it still just him being framed? Like, I'm really not sure, and I'm curious to find out.
Yeah, I am too. We kept seeing Skeets trying to talk Booster Gold into turning himself in, but I knew that wasn't going to happen. But what I thought was funny was Booster asking himself, what would Batman do? And he decides he's going to try to solve the mystery himself. I thought that was pretty funny.
And what I thought was kind of interesting too was the way that King was writing him. He was writing Booster kind of like some of the goofier boosters that we've seen. the Skeets reacting to him is not usually like the "you're an idiot, Michael," but more like, well, something's wrong. Like, you're not, something's not right with the way you're acting. And I thought that was kind of interesting, the way he did that, because, I mean, relatively speaking, Booster has done things like that as just being dumb. And I don't know. I'm very intrigued by the fact that even Skeets, a robot, thinks that something's not quite right with Booster when he's not. I don't know. There wasn't anything he was doing, I thought, this one that was particularly like un-Booster-like. Very curious what's going on with that.
Yeah. When he went to Flash to ask him questions about the autopsies, Flash had no idea what was going on. And of course, Booster spills the beans about Wally being dead. And we see Barry zoom off, and then he comes back shortly after that and just freaking punches him.
Which, yeah, and then so that was, so the implication there was that whatever, Barry clearly found something that pretty explicitly sets up Booster as the culprit. So I'm really curious to see what's going to happen with that.
Yeah, I'm very curious about that too. Then the other part of this duo, Harley Quinn, she's on the run too. And she knows the Trinity is after her. So she goes to the Penguin for a safe place to hide. But yeah, the Trinity still find her. And I thought she played the Trinity well, stealing Wonder Woman's lasso, using it on Batman, taking the kryptonite from his belt that he clearly told Superman he didn't have.
Yeah.
That was a great scene there.
Yeah.
Then the other thing I liked about this issue was we got to see the videos of each of the Trinity talking at Sanctuary. So we saw Wonder Woman, and we see that she was having nightmares about her mother. We see Batman. And Batman's what I thought was pretty funny, because he only says a few words. He talks about bringing on his partners who become his family. He says, "I've watched so many of them die, I'm sorry." That was about the amount of him opening up.
Mm-hmm.
And then Superman, we see him talking about his dual identity. I thought it was very interesting.
Well, and that was the one that was kind of almost terrifying in a sense, not because of what Superman was saying, but the implication at the end was that somebody actually got these videos.
Yes.
So, and that one is catastrophic, really. Like, of all the things that were, obviously all of those are bad, because superheroes, you know, psychology, getting out, like, any of that dirty laundry is bad. But that one, I feel like, is the silver bullet of all of those.
And of course, Batman took his mask off during his, too.
So yeah, that's true. Yeah.
They know his identity. And like you said, somebody at the end of the issue, they sent one of the videos to Lois Lane at the Daily Planet. And the first one she received was Arsenal. And it said, more truths will come. And it was signed The Puddlers. Well, I went back to issue number one and saw that The Puddlers was that family that was supposed to be dead there. So I was wondering about that.
Huh.
So very, very interesting issue. And I'm excited to see where this thing's going.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to our next title for this week. Justice League Aquaman Drowned Earth number 1. Gave it the old thumbs up. Thought it was kind of cool we got a glimpse of Aquaman as a child, seeing his mother leaving. I've never really seen that story before.
This I thought was an interesting chapter, because it initially looked like it was going to obviously, of course, focus on this, like, extraterrestrial invasion focused on the ocean. But we can see the core of this story is kind of uncovering some hidden new power that Aquaman doesn't realize that he's had this whole time. And I'm kind of curious to see where they go with that. And, like, if that's going to be, obviously it will be portrayed as a major status quo change, but will it actually stick? And that's really what I'm kind of curious to see, is will the status quo that comes out of the story be one that sticks long term or not?
That's interesting, because when he's at the Blood Reef, we see Black Manta show up at the Blood Reef, and the beings there, the sea gods, they steal Aquaman's powers and give them to Black Manta.
Mm-hmm.
And he even says, he's like, you had this much power and you used it to speak to fish?
Right.
So I'm curious what more powers he's had that he hasn't been using or tapping into. What else we saw in this issue? We see all the cities in the, basically all the major cities in the world being flooded. Superman being powerless to stop Metropolis. The other thing I liked was Batman seems to be playing a pivotal role in this story too. Because he's kind of coordinating the Justice League as much as he can from the Hall of Justice. But we also know he's got all those broken bones, so he's like in this Batman suit cast.
One thing I found interesting about this, and I'm not sure I felt in a positive way, was that this story so far has felt almost more of Batman's story than Aquaman's story. Even though I know it's supposed to be about Aquaman and Mira on some level, it's felt like it's Batman's been the main character for most of this so far. Between the issue we've talked about previously and this one, arguably Batman has been the main character.
Okay, I'm not going to argue with that with you, because it does seem like he's playing a pivotal role. So, because I put that in my notes here, so.
Yeah.
So, and I've already read the next issue for next week. So, I know what happens in the next issue. So, gotcha. I can't really argue Batman playing a pivotal role, so. All right, let's move on to our next title. Justice League Dark and Wonder Woman, The Witching Hour number 1. Gave this the old thumbs up. Thought this story was very well written and easy to understand. Artwork was great as well.
I agree. I thought this was a great ending to the story. I was satisfied with the ending. It felt like we got a good story. And the other thing I really liked was that they incorporated the Upside Down Man into this, which I wasn't honestly expecting. And the way that he incorporated into this, he already, I thought, had a strong debut in that opening arc of Justice League Dark. And then you got this, and I feel like it's really established him quickly as this really interesting magical villain.
Yeah. So, we see Wonder Woman defeat Hecate by having Xantana open that realm to the other world, and basically Upside Down Man comes over and destroys her, defeats her.
Yeah.
And then we get that interesting twist at the end of the issue. We find out that Cersei was the fifth of the Witchmark girls, and that she has all of Hecate's power now. So, you know, was she playing everybody the whole time?
That definitely seemed to be the implication, which makes sense, because they were using the version of Cersei that they had been using was that weird, like, not explicitly evil one. And that more, like, she had that more, like, hipstery outfit and everything. She was not classic Cersei. And this seems like an interesting way to go back into that, where you have, like, no, just kidding. I was playing all of you guys, and now I've gotten what I actually want, which is to be this serious magical threat that Cersei usually is.
Yeah. The other thing I thought this issue did very well is we got the story of creation of the multiverse. We got Hecate's whole history, magic's history, you know, where the Greek gods and some of the other gods came from. The introduction of the dark multiverse, and basically we learned the full history of magic and how Hecate came to be evil. I thought they did a great job of explaining it. It was clear, very understandable.
It was an interesting story too. Yeah, I agree. It was both easy to understand. It was interesting, and the way they incorporated Upside Down Man into that really, I thought, helped. He's barely in that story, but even just the little bit that he's there really helps you kind of understand that character more and what's really going on. I just thought it was interesting because the thing that excites me about that is that DC tends to have somewhat limited options when it comes to magical villains. It feels like there's like only three or four that they are able to pick from. It's usually either Trigon or Cersei or Morgan Le Fay. Or maybe one of their, and then usually the fourth option is like either Dr. Faust or one of their magical heroes turned bad. Like, it feels like that's almost always, if it's a magical story and there's a villain, it feels like it's usually one of them. Not always, obviously, but frequently. And to me, this is exciting because you've got this major magical story and you've got this new, exciting, interesting villain being developed. I think it's interesting.
Right. And we know he's going to be showing back up in future issues of this series, along with Cersei. So they're setting those two up right now. So it's going to be really interesting. All right, let's move on to our last title for this week, Terrifics Annual Number 1. I gave it the thumbs up. It wasn't written by Jeff Lemire, which I could tell right away.
Yeah,
but
it showed.
It showed, but this annual had three different stories that were okay. I mean, it felt like the Terrifics. The first story was about Stagg trying to sell this plastic goo as if it were a spying device. And, of course, it turned out to be a monster that cloned people. That was okay story. The second story, we find out that Java's life was in ancient times and how he came to be in the modern world.
It did not see, but the thing with that story, it was interesting, but it did not explain the leap to where we are now in terms of Java's status quo.
That is true.
You know what I mean? Like that was not a satisfying story to me. Not because it wasn't interesting. I mean, like, I enjoyed it, but when it ended, I was like, "Wait, that is not enough. That does not explain the cliffhanger that we just got in the main series."
Yes, it doesn't. It didn't. So, clearly not what they were going for. And then the third story we got, it was about Tom Strong and his adventure in the dark multiverse, and how the message he left his message there that the Terrifics find in their first issue. I found that interesting.
It didn't make the video that he leaves doesn't totally make sense, because he was able to relatively easily defeat that giant monster, and yet the video he leaves is pretty dour, where he's like, "I'm probably dead. If you find this, I'm probably dead." And it's like, I don't know. It didn't make sense to me based on the story that we got. He seemed fine.
That is true.
I don't know if that makes any sense or not, but it was like, it was a cool story, and it was cool seeing him in action. I liked all of that. And then, but at the end, I was like, "Well, but you're fine." It was such a bleak, that video that he leaves is very bleak. It seems very clear. It's like, I'm going to die. Like, this is, I'm done. He was fine.
Yeah, I have no argument for that.
For me, I enjoyed it. And I think if you're a Terrifics fan, I wouldn't see the harm in getting this. However, I wouldn't necessarily recommend it if you're like wanting to check the series out. I don't know. I would just read the main series. They're enjoyable stories that I think, although they are connected to major plot points, I thought didn't really add that much.
I have to agree with you on that. I didn't really add that much. We could have actually done without reading this.
Yeah. I think if you're a fan of the Terrifics and you're reading the series, you should probably get it because it's more fun Terrific stuff. But if you're like, you only occasionally read the Terrifics, or you're not sure if you should get into it, this would not be the issue that I start with.
Yeah. And I was kind of disappointed that it wasn't written by Jeff Lemire. So
that was surprising to me. Like, I get not having it being drawn by the usual series artist, but being written doesn't totally make sense.
Yeah. I didn't get that either. But hey, whatever. We got more regular series coming soon, so. All right, well, that wraps up our comics books talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk our CW shows.
Check out what's been going on with the Pop Culture Cosmos Show and the PCC Multiverse.
That is by far my favorite, because it's also character-driven and the stakes are high and there's much more of a mystery and intrigue to it.
A game like Wolfenstein, which people are saying are one of the most socially important video games of the past 10 years.
Catch our shows on Podbean, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or on over 30 more podcast outlets, including our friends right here at the ESO Network.
And we're back! Let's talk Supergirl Season 4, Episode 4. Ahimsa. All right, last episode, Mercy Graves eradicated the atmosphere with kryptonite. So Supergirl had to be put in a suit that would remove the kryptonite from her body and keep her safe from the kryptonite in the atmosphere.
All right, so that leads me to what I thought was my biggest, like, what's going on in terms of this episode was they made this whole huge deal how kryptonite has infected the atmosphere, and this is a major issue. And then once the nanite solution occurs to them, it fixes the problem really fast. Like, those nanites, they rid the Earth's entire atmosphere of kryptonite within the matter of hours, which is fine. But then, like, and that's fine. Like, I can accept that. In a show where they have flying aliens, I can accept nanites doing that. Okay? But it didn't then make sense why Alex was talking about the final mission that Supergirl goes on. She was like, this is a big risk, I know, but I need you out there. It's not a big risk because the nanites were going to be done in, like, 15 minutes. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
They're making it seem like this could potentially be death. And it's like, if you just wait 15 minutes, then you'll be totally fine. And you apparently don't even need the suit. I don't know. I could totally accept the solution that they came up with. I guess I was just a little let down with how easy of a solution it ended up being. I thought this suit was going to be a status quo for at least a few episodes. That was my biggest surprise with this, is I thought she was going to be in that suit for like 4 or 5 episodes. They made a huge deal showing it off in that Comic-Con trailer. It was like the only new thing that they showed.
Yeah, they did make a big deal about it, but...
And it ultimately was nothing. I mean, really, it was technically 2 episodes, but really 1 episode, because the last one we barely saw her.
Yeah, you're right.
I don't know. I guess I was just disappointed. It was a really cool suit. I thought it was a really interesting dynamic having her stuck in that suit. I'm shocked that they didn't want to explore that more.
Hey, I don't know. On some of these CW shows, we've seen this kind of thing, like with Flashpoint. They only didn't want to do 1 episode with that.
And Flashpoint, like, as disappointing as that was, like, that is one of the things I've been most disappointed by any of these CW things. It at least sort of made sense on a level that it would have been hard, I think, to film. Like, I get from a filming a TV show standpoint, it would have made sense because they would have had to have just, like, completely redone things for an extended period of time, whereas it's much easier to film a show the way you've been doing it the last few seasons. I get that part, I kind of get, but this one doesn't make sense. All it requires is for Kara to wear that suit instead of her other suit that she normally wears.
I don't know, Cletus, I have no answer for you. I'm not the showrunner. So yeah, it would have been cool to see her in the suit more, but apparently they're not going that direction for some reason. All right, let's get to John and Manchester Black. That was interesting.
Yes, I did not remember that Manchester Black was supposed to be on the show until he said his... When they, like, zoomed up on him, I was like, well, clearly he's got to be... You know what I mean? When they do that pause,
yep.
Like, oh, this is, I have to know who this person is. Because otherwise he'd have just been like, I'm Steve, and walked out. But when he did that long pause, like, oh... Turn around dramatically, zooming up on his face. I'm like, okay, I must know who this guy is. Manchester Black. I was like, oh, wait, what? I am very intrigued by what they're doing with Manchester Black, because this seems like almost like a pre-Manchester Black that we know from the comics. He doesn't seem to have powers yet.
Yeah, that we know of.
That we know of? I can't imagine that he'd have been keeping that to himself. I feel like we'd have seen that. I'm really curious to see what they're going to do. Like, I feel like we're going to kind of get the origin of Manchester Black with this.
That's what story. It felt like, because by the end of the episode, we see him starting to go down his dark path of justice.
I'm really curious to see if we're going to get I'm hoping we get the metahuman Manchester Black, because that's far more interesting. If he's just going to be like a gun-toting anti-hero, that's not that interesting to me. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like Manchester Black is most interesting when he's got those powers.
He's got to have some sort of powers. I mean, if Supergirl's going to go up against him eventually, just have him being a gun-toting Manchester Black, it's not going to be that interesting against Supergirl.
No, it would be a 2-second fight.
Yeah. So, it'll be interesting to see where they go.
I was thinking, you know what, honestly, I thought was going to happen. This whole episode, they talked about this inner rage that Jean is fighting against. And then when he had that kind of psychic link towards the end, when he was taking Manchester Black's girlfriend's pain away before she died, I thought he was going to, because he was kind of like having a hard time controlling his powers because of that. I thought what was going to happen was he was going to kind of lose control and somehow like accidentally let his rage like slip into Manchester Black. I don't know if that, you know, that makes any sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But like somehow, like some sort of psychically, just like he has like this glitch and it affects Manchester Black, like somehow that triggers his power, but also infects him with that like warped sense of rage and justice. I don't know. I was clearly just pulling stuff out of a hat because none of that happened. But I was like, oh, that'd be really kind of interesting. Okay, I can go with this. And then it didn't happen. I was like, oh, I'm just an idiot. Okay.
But it'll be interesting to see where they go with Manchester Black, because it's obvious they're not done with him yet.
No, and I liked what we got a lot. I liked the actor that they have playing him. I very much enjoyed that.
I did too. I love the team up with John. It worked well. And then, you know, where they got to at the end of the episode, you can see that he's going to be starting down his dark path. So,
and I think it's going to be interesting because it feels like they're going to draw a nice parallel between him and John. And I almost wonder if he's going to be John's villain, not necessarily Kara's.
Ooh, that would be interesting.
It kind of feels like he's more tied to Jean's story, which I'm fine with, because I think that would help give them a story for Jean consistently throughout this. Because you can only just do him struggling with pacifism for so long before it gets boring.
Yeah.
So giving him some sort of like, not necessarily, I don't even think he'll be a direct nemesis, so to speak, but more of like a war of ideology. I don't know. It could be very interesting.
Yeah. All right. Also in this issue, Agent Liberty is just turning out to be a great villain. He seems to be putting together a team to further his agenda.
I was surprised when Mercy and her brother were killed. I was not necessarily upset by that, though, because they were not as good, in my opinion. Like, I don't know. They were kind of, especially the brother was just kind of a joke, which was sort of the point, but I don't know. I didn't really enjoy him as much as a villain as I really like. The Agent of Liberty is just such a hateable but like engaging. Like I hate that character, but he's super engaging. It's like I enjoy him being the bad guy. So I'm kind of glad that the twins are gone, because it's going to really help pull the focus on the guy who really ought to be the sole villain.
My biggest problem with Agent Liberty is when I see him, hey, that's Doomsday from Smallville. That's my biggest problem with him.
I think so. Going off of Agent of Liberty and also like his whole following, I think this was genius. The development at the end with Guardian is fascinating, where he's sort of inadvertently become a hero of the human only movement. Like, and it's, I think it's just so interesting, because like, what do you do in that? Because like, he wants to go and save people, and he didn't do anything wrong, but all of a sudden now his message is getting warped. That's just really, I think, a really cool storyline to explore.
That is a cool storyline to explore. And you know, how can he change his image from that? You know what? Yeah. I mean,
right.
So I see his image getting more tainted as we get further into the season.
Well, then what's ironic though is that it's not. Like, if this is, publicly speaking, is the most positive he's ever been portrayed. But he can read between the lines and see what, like, how, like, it's appealing to the wrong group. And it's just sort of like, oh, crap, that's not what I want. Like,
yeah. Man,
interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. Supergirl is just good this season.
It is. I have to say, though, I am bummed by the how quick we moved past the suit. Just, it's a cool suit, man.
Yes, it was.
It was just an interesting status quo, too. It's not just the superficial suit. It was just the whole idea of her kind of being stuck in, like, this different reality where she can still help, but she's somewhat limited. I'm surprised that they were so ready to get rid of that.
I'm wondering where the other Supergirl is going to fit in at. They briefly showed her.
Yeah, I have to agree, because it feels like, are they going to do, like, is the Agent of Liberty going to be defeated in the mid-season finale? And then the second half is going to be about Russian Supergirl? I don't know. Like, I'm really curious to see how those two are going to, because they are not connected as of now.
No, they're not. So, I guess we'll see. All right, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Arrow, Season 7, Episode 4, Level 2. All right, Cletus, Oliver made it to Level 2. But man, this did not go like I expected. We had that psychologist there, and he's determined to reform Oliver by any means necessary. Did you find those flickering lights annoying?
Yes. Yeah, well, which was clearly the point. There was clearly something antagonistic about the psychologist beyond just being an inconvenience to Oliver. But what I thought was interesting, what we were talking about earlier in the podcast, his fixation on who the other guy was in the boat was interesting to me, because that's never been talked about really on the show before.
Do you think maybe it's a relative?
That's what something, and I don't know if necessarily the new Green Arrow is connected to that, or if it's something, there's something relevant about it, but it has nothing to do with the current Green Arrow. I don't know, but like the fact that he asked about it more than once, and that's why when you start to repeat, then that's when they're hinting that there's something important there, and I was like, oh. You know, it's one of those things where, like, you never really think about it, and then as soon as the show draws your attention to it, you're like, oh, wait, yeah, there was another dude on that boat. What's the story with that?
Okay, let me ask you this then. Now that we're getting into this, do you think the psychologist has any knowledge of the new Green Arrow? Maybe the new Green Arrow? Or maybe has a relative that's the new Green Arrow?
And see, that's what I can't figure. I'm not sure if the psychologist is connected to the Green Arrow, or if he's connected to Diaz. You know, and I couldn't tell, but he was clearly that psychologist to me, and maybe I was reading the scenes wrong, but it felt like he was not necessarily acting as just doing his job. It felt like he was serving some sort of agenda. And I'm curious whose agenda he was trying to carry out there.
All right, I have to agree with you on that, because it felt the same way to me. He was trying to do something or get some sort of information, or just trying to mess with Oliver's head.
And that's where when he kept asking about who the other guy on the boat was, that I was like, what? Why do you keep asking about that? Why is that important? And that's why I could be following a red herring. I could be totally on the wrong path. I have no idea, but there was just when he talked about that more than once, I was like, "What's, Just the whole fixation on the dad in the boat, just everything about him being stuck on that boat. It was just felt like there was something there.
Yeah, because that's what he focused on.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's an interesting take there, Cletus.
Yeah. I, like I said, I will be the first to admit if I'm completely off base and it has nothing to do with anything, I will admit it. But there, it really felt like beyond just the psychologist being antagonistic and even in doing so serving somebody else, it felt like there was a reason specifically he was kept asking about that. I'd be curious to see what it is and if anything.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And by the end of the episode, we see a pretty broken Oliver.
Yeah.
I mean, he wasn't even saying his name was Oliver anymore. He was inmate, whatever his number is.
Now, I wonder, let me ask you, do you think he is actually broken, or do you think he's just giving the psychologist what he wants?
I was wondering if he was giving the psychologist what he wants. That's what I was hoping. I'm hoping he's not broken.
I think that would describe exactly how I felt. I am unsure, but hopeful that he is just playing along.
Because we know Oliver has always been determined, and he's determined to get to this demon, which I'm expecting to see in this next episode.
Me too.
So I'm sure we'll see more of the psychiatrist, but I'm guessing Oliver's going to get to his destination. All right, let's move on to Dinah and Renee. Dinah and Renee started this episode at odds when the new Green Arrow saves Renee's daughter from a fire that was set by this arson gang. And it was great to see them both working together by the end of the episode, along with the new Green Arrow. I just thought that little story arc there was pretty good.
It was. It was refreshing seeing Dinah act temporarily unreasonable, but figure it out within the same episode and not take 5 or 6 episodes to get it straight instead, like last season.
Yes. I'm still wondering who's behind the mask.
I am, yes. I'm very curious. Even more so, though, was then the lead-in into the flash-forwards that we got for this. So we see that Dinah will eventually re-embrace being Black Canary, which is not a surprise. But this sort of very bleak reality of Star City in the future, like, stuff clearly went wrong. And we were starting, it felt like we were seeing the building blocks for that reality happening now, where all of a sudden these, it seemed like very powerful, rich people were burning things down so that they could buy up the land. So then presumably that creates this reality where the Glades are this walled off haven or something of keeping themselves safe from the rest of Star City. Very curious what's going on with all of that.
Yeah, I am too. We saw Smoke Industries again. That journey that Felicity has William on is very interesting. The Rubik's Cube with the map. And we also see Zoe, Renee's daughter, show up, part of a vigilante resistance.
Yeah.
That was interesting.
Yeah, I agree. Now, what I'm wondering, though, with this flash forward is, given how bleak it is it set in stone?
That's what I was wondering, too. Or can it change?
Part of me wonders if it's going to... Part of me wants it to change, because otherwise Arrow, in a sense, has to end on a sad note, right?
Yeah.
At least, like, the main characters that we've been following for 7 seasons, even if whatever is going on in the future is resolved and gets a happy ending, the implication is the ending of the present-day story ends poorly. Just as a fan of the characters, like, I don't want Oliver's legacy to be a broken city.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And then Dinah reveals that Felicity Smoke is dead, though I don't think so. Even though that Dinah thinks so, I don't think so. I think she's going to show up in this flash forward.
I would agree. I'd be very surprised if she didn't.
The thing about this flash forward is just as interesting as the regular story.
I agree. It's been good. And I like the way that they're not giving a ton. Like, there's not a ton of scenes dedicated to the flash forward, which was sort of how some of the later season flashbacks worked. But it works better, I feel like, for these flash forwards, because there's a mystery going on. And I think one of the inherent flaws with the flashbacks at a certain point is we kind of knew, in a sense, how they had to end. We didn't know necessarily the fates of everybody, but we knew for sure, like, Oliver would be fine. Like, he had to be fine, because we know that he got off the island. And so when they would only show bits and pieces, it kind of got frustrating, because you're like, look, if you're playing it for a mystery, I know how the mystery ends. Oliver survives. Whereas with this, you can kind of play more, you can lean a lot heavier into not showing your hand that much, because I don't think anybody knows where it's going to go, really.
Right. And
it could go anywhere. They're not set in stone with anything on that. It can go anywhere.
Right. We don't even know if Oliver's alive at this point either. We don't know what's happened to Oliver. They haven't even mentioned him.
Yeah, and I think there's something very smart about doing it this way, because the showrunners even talked about this, that it creates new storytelling opportunities, which of course it does, but like, you're really not limited by anything, even like nothing in the comics, nothing that you've done within the lore of your show. It can go anywhere, because we haven't seen any of that future.
Right. All right. One last thing before we move on. We see Felicity and Laurel working together back in the present time to get answers from the silencer. Felicity seems to be going to a very dark place in this.
Yeah, I would agree.
So, we kind of saw this a couple seasons ago, didn't we?
I don't really care for it, not because I don't like a darker Felicity. Like, that's fine. I just can't. The actress that plays Felicity does not convincingly play a darker Felicity. I don't know if that makes sense. Like, I can't buy into her being a, like, her morals twisted. I don't know if that makes any sense, but the way she always plays her, she still kind of plays her as like this sort of, there's this level of fragility to her that's always kind of irked me about the character, to be honest, where she always has that like semi-crying voice that she goes to anytime she gets a little bit upset. She sounds like she's on the cusp of tears, and so even when she's trying to go dark, she goes to that like semi-crying voice, and I'm just like, I don't believe that you're going off the deep end right now.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that just because of the type of personality she is.
It's just the way that she plays the character. I mean, like, I like Felicity as a character. Clearly, I like the way she plays Felicity. But just a part of that that goes with that is that, like, I can't. I'm not convinced when they're trying to be like, Felicity's going down this darker path. Like, no, she's not.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe she is on the show, but I'm not buying into it.
And I don't like darker Felicity, so.
Yeah, and I don't really think anybody does. I don't think that's really ever been received very well. Anytime they've explored that path, I don't feel like most people enjoy that. So I'm surprised. I don't think there's a CW show more beholden to its fan base than Arrow is, for better or worse. And I don't think that that's something that people clamor for.
I don't think so either. But I think it was smart because they couldn't get anything out of the silencer, they ended up letting her escape to lead them back to Diaz. But I don't think that's going to go well for them. I see it backfiring somehow.
I mean, yeah, I agree, because if it works out, then that Diaz is defeated, and then where you have like 18 episodes left.
Yeah. But I'm very much enjoying Arrow.
And, yes, I totally agree.
Looking very forward to the next episode. All right, moving on to our next episode for this week. Legends of Tomorrow, Season 4, Episode 3, Dancing Queen. Cletus, this season of Legends is freaking awesome.
I was bummed that we didn't actually get a leprechaun. I just want to say that. I felt a little bit cheated, and I hope they make up for it later in the season.
So, we see Ray, or should I say Rage, joins a punk band to find out who the magical anomaly is. And, of course, we find out it's a shapeshifter who eventually is going to impersonate the Queen of England, thus changing the timeline. But I thought it was interesting. Instead of sending her to hell, John Constantine takes away her powers. And, of course, she's shapeshifted into a Maiath this time. And that's how we're going to get Amaya back. Well, it's not going to be Amaya, but this new character played by the same actors. I thought that was a cool idea.
I agree, although it did make me question, if he had the ability to do that, why were they going to send her to hell in the first place?
Because that
seems so. It was meant to be extreme anyway. Like the show pretty clearly showed that that was an extreme punishment to begin with. But like, especially when you take into the context that John could have just simply taken away her ability to transform, it was like, dude, that's rough.
Yeah, I don't know. I think John Constantine has it. It felt like he had it. He has it in for these evil creatures.
Right, which I totally get. It was just one of those things. It didn't occur to me at first, and then when I was thinking about it, I was like, wait a second. You could have done that the whole time, you jerk.
Oh, man, John Constantine and Roy are not getting along. Of course, you mentioned this last week.
Yeah, I'm definitely enjoying John's dynamic with the team. And I just... He's definitely brought a nice, like, fresh energy to the team. That I think one of the reasons why this show, like, obviously it's a really funny, enjoyable show. But I think also the rotating cast really helps keep it fresh. And he's been great. He's just been such a great addition.
Yeah, he has. And he's not like the other legends. I mean, we see him leave the ship and he goes to the bar where his mother works at. He wants to make sure his father can't have any kids. He tries to kick him in the nads. But what's funny is the time stream won't let him allow it. And we just see him keep falling over multiple times.
And I think what's interesting, too, when you're getting at he's not like the other legends, is that he can definitely be played for jokes. And I think they've done that really well. But he's also, like, good at what he does on a different level than the legends. Like, a lot of the obviously Sarah's really good at what she does. Ray is a good scientist. But on some level, they're all kind of jokes in some way. Or most of them are, with, I'd say, the exception of Sarah. And John's not. Like, he's arguably the best at what he does. And I think that's kind of – it's interesting. I think that's one of the things that makes an interesting dynamic on the show is that he is an actual expert on a lot of this stuff when, like, you have – like, Nate's a history expert but is a dope. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I think that kind of – that dynamic just works well in contrast with the rest of the team.
All right. Speaking of Nate, we got the new Time Bros. Oh, man. Gary is freaking hilarious. Them bringing back that killer plant. I think it's fun how they are exploring Gary more through Nate. And I'm wondering how many times Gary has mind wiped that taco lady. Oh, man. Ah, very, very fun with Nate and Gary.
Yeah, I agree. I think, we obviously enjoyed anytime Gary popped up last year, but the show definitely knows what they have with that character. I do worry that they could stretch it thin at some point. So I do think sometimes I don't know that we necessarily need Gary every episode, but when he does pop up, he's usually pretty good.
Yeah. I noticed he still had his Band-Aid over his nipple. Oh, man. Great. Legends is great this season. I'm loving it.
Yeah, totally agree.
All right, let's move on to our last title for this week. Titans, Season 1, Episode 4, Doom Patrol. Doom Patrol episode was mostly about Beast Boy's origin. We meet the Doom Patrol, and it's basically a group of misfits that was brought together by this doctor.
The chief.
What's that?
The chief.
Yes, the chief. And we did get to see Beast Boy's origin, which was kind of interesting.
One thing I thought was interesting that I had noticed that he had only ever transformed into a tiger, but the implication is right now that seems to be the only thing he is capable of transforming into.
And I'm wondering if that's going to change.
I hope so. He's not Tiger Boy.
I know. I mean, if the show does do it, it's probably for budget reasons, but they've got to transform into other stuff.
I also hope they figure out a way, like right now, like they definitely have played it well, kind of for jokes that he always has to change right back into his suit afterwards. But I'm hoping that they I hope some kind of workaround with that, because otherwise you get to a point where every single time Beast Boy does anything, he's got to then go and run and grab his costume again. Like, that is wildly impractical.
I've already watched episode 5, so I'm not going to say anything about that. So it was great that at the end of this episode, we got Dick, Corey, Rachel, and Garth all together now. And I'm excited that the Titans are finally together as a group.
You know what was funny? Even though I know in my head that those were the four characters that we've been following, when they finally got together, I was like, oh, that's kind of a small team. And I don't know why it hadn't occurred to me until just then. I think because we knew all these other characters were popping up, we were talking about all of them, that I never really focused on the fact that the core was really just those four characters. And it was only when I saw the four of them together, I was like, oh, wait a second.
I'm wondering if this team's going to grow next season. But
I'm sure it will. I don't take it as a complaint or anything. I felt dumb. It was when I noticed it. I was like, how have I not noticed this, that it was only going to be this small team?
But I'm wondering, is Hawk and Dove supposed to be part of this team too, or were they just in it for an episode or so?
It did not feel like they were going to actually be on the Titans team. It just felt like they were going to be present.
I wonder if they're going to get their own show and they just haven't said anything, or if that we're done with them.
I think they'll come again. I think they're just going to be like guest appearance type of heroes. I foresee them being occasionally popping up, but I don't think they'll be on the team. I would be very surprised if they got their own show. I don't see that much of a story to tell with them. To be honest with you, I don't know. I think you would really struggle to do a TV show that could run for more than a season or two with Hawk and Dove.
All right. Well, I'll be excited to see them again, and I hope they pop up. We'll probably see them later this season, I'm sure.
I would be shocked if we don't see them again. There's no way we don't see them at some point.
Right.
The Hawk and Dick are not done. Like, that confrontation is not finished.
Yeah, I agree with you there. What'd you think of the Doom Patrol themselves? I've never read the Doom Patrol title, so I don't know much about these characters, but they seem kind of interesting, but I didn't really see any use of powers or anything, really.
They were great. I was just their whole aesthetic that they went with was fantastic. I really like I don't know a ton about the Doom Patrol either, but I mean, just at the way that they portrayed them, it's just these weird group of misfits, and just like everything about them was just kind of off. And even like when they were eating, like their whole feast was just like everything was just like not quite right. I just really liked everything they did with that. The costumes I thought were super on point. Obviously they look like their comic book counterparts, but also just the style that they went with, like, just really fit their aesthetic. I thought it's just kind of like being, you know, like unsettling on some level.
Right, and we know they're getting their own show coming out in 2019, so I'm interested in checking it out.
I thought this was a fantastic stealth pilot for the Doom Patrol, because I think if you just start a Doom Patrol show, I think you get a lot of people that would be like, what is this? And I think the best way to get people interested was an episode like this, because I was already excited, because I already know who they are. But if you're not and you watch this episode, I think a lot of people that watch this episode would go like, yeah, I want to see a show with those characters. What weird characters.
They are weird characters. I'm just wondering one thing, though. What time's dinner?
Okay, the one thing I did have to say that was really confusing to me about the Doom Patrol, though, is that the guy playing the chief will not be playing him on the show.
That is
weird. It's going to be Timothy Dalton, one of the old Bond actors, which I think is fantastic. Like, I am incredibly excited for that. Why didn't he play him in this episode, though?
I'm wondering if he wasn't available when they filmed this episode.
But they're so different. Like, that Timothy Dalton is not, like, they're not going to be similar. For one thing, he's going to have a completely different accent, because there's a 100% chance that Dalton's going to be using his British accent.
I don't know, Cletus.
But you know what I mean? Like, you're not gonna ask Bond to not use his accent. Like, of course he's gonna be British. I liked the guy too. I very much enjoyed him, but as we were going for a second, I was like, wait, I could have sworn that Timothy Dalton was supposed to be playing this guy, and then after the episode was over, I went and looked it up, but he is still playing him. And so I was like, oh, that's weird. Because I enjoyed the portrayal of the guy that we got in this one. It was very like antagonistic, but not necessarily evil. Like, it was just really like very interesting with that character, because argue that he's not evil, but you hard pressed to say that he was clearly good either.
Yeah, that was interesting, to say the least. I was very, you know, if he was supposed to be so good, I was like, why is he letting Rachel go? Why does he think he has to operate on her?
And then like the way he was addressing Beast Boy, it was just, yeah, I mean, it was like definitely bordering antagonistic, but like they never totally had him cross the line, and the implication never seemed to be that he was trying to do something explicitly bad to Rachel.
Yeah, He was just trying to fix her.
Yeah.
And was bound and determined that he could fix her.
Yeah, it seemed to be more like he was ignoring her pleas for help than doing something explicitly bad. I don't know. I found the portrayal to be very interesting. I'm very curious to see how that continues over into its own series. And also how they're going to explain the completely different actor playing.
I guess we'll find out, huh?
Yeah.
All right. Well, that wraps up our show for this week. Do you have a shout out, Cletus?
Yeah. So I thought I would. We actually talked about the very first issue of this, but the Doom Patrol series that came out in the Young Animal imprint has the majority of these characters in it. It's got Chief, Mr. Negative, and Elastawoman, and I can't remember the other guy's name. The robot dude.
Yeah, I can't remember his name either.
Yeah, they are all in it, in addition to a few characters that were not in this episode. But Volume 1, Brick by Brick, it's weird. It is super weird. And this is why I was like super curious to see what they were going to do with the TV show, because there's such a bizarre, frequently metafictional story where they're like really kind of crossing the border of like exploring comics as a medium and like that sort of self-aware, not necessarily self-aware, but like, I don't know how to describe it exactly, but metafictional stuff. I'm very curious to see, because they got kind of weird in this episode with them. Like, it definitely had a different vibe than the normal Titan show. And they've said that they're going to get weirder with the actual show. Like, I want to see that. I want to see how kind of funky that show gets.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, that's for sure.
Yeah, so anyway, the comic, which again is quite out there, Doom Patrol Volume 1, Brick by Brick.
We'll have a link for that in our show notes. All right, and for my shout out, Howdy Mike Gordon recently had a birthday a couple days ago, and I just wanted to shout out to him and wish him a happy birthday. All right, if you'd like to give us feedback or make a comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can call our feedback line at 317-564-9133, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, coming up next week, we'll be talking Batman, Nightwing, Adventures of the Super Sons, Justice League, The Green Lantern Number 1 by Grant Morrison, and of course, CW shows and Titans. Thanks for joining us. And we'll see you next time.
Time to go.
You sure this is necessary?
The Guardians of the Universe seem to think so.
How long will you be gone? But we will be back, little brother.
I wish I could go with.
I doubt your mother would approve.
I'll miss you.
Perhaps you could water the plants in my apartment while I am gone.
Be careful, all right?
May the gods be with you all.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the Tee Public Store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.